Let's see.
Guess what? This is a very momentous day for us.
Why?
Have you heard of the conference mix?
I heard about it because I happened to watch Terrell Cox's interview. I thought that was very interesting.
That's great.
Ooh, yeah. Excellent.
Well, today, Mix 08 sold out.
Yay!
Nice.
Yay! So we're very excited.
Nice
yes.
work.
So we're 2 weeks away from Vegas, and we have a full house.
That's great.
So
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we're in good mood today.
Are there any women talking at Mix 08?
There are actually quite a bit. And actually, the group that Charles and I are in mm-hmm. also runs the Professional Developers Conference, the PDC. So we kind of know the demographics. And Mix actually has a pretty high percentage of females.
Oh, that's great.
Excellent.
Probably because we're tapping into a lot of the designer and creatives as well as developers.
Yeah.
So enough about me
and
us.
What is this marketing going on here?
Exactly. Always.
Jeez.
So we have a guest today. Her name is Linda Apsley.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So Linda, where are we? What building are we in? What group are you in?
We're in building 43. I work in the Windows Server organization. Actually, we just reorged. I work in Windows Protocol Compliance. I used to work in Windows Server under Ian McDonald.
Excellent.
And Protocol Engineering Compliance is the name of the organization. And okay. our responsibility or job is to make sure that the engineering teams are compliant with all government regulations.
Very cool. So how long have you been at Microsoft?
It'll be 10 years in September.
Wow, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And are you a developer, former programmer? What's your background?
I'm a program manager. And I actually came at it from an interesting perspective. I decided when I was in college that I wanted to have a large family. Mm-hmm. And I thought the way to do that would be to have the family first and the career second. So I graduated, worked for about 3 or 4 years full-time. Then I had my family, worked part-time teaching computer science at community colleges wherever we lived. Mm-hmm. And then when my youngest daughter went to kindergarten, I came to work. And I, during my years at home, while I was keeping my hands involved in it, I did a lot of technical writing. Even though my passion was more around program management. And so when I came back, I first came back as a tester because I wanted to get my technical skills up. I was a little worried because, you know, when you got 6 kids, you don't have as much time to read technical information. There's other things you're thinking about. So I started out as a tester in the scalability and performance team. And I did that for a while, and then there were some people who really wanted me to move into documentation because of my background and to help with some of the product docs. And besides, it was a significant level increase, and I was all for that. Mm-hmm. So I switched over to UA and did writing for a while, and then I went back into program management about 8 years ago, and I've been doing that ever since. I was an individual contributor, then I was a lead, then a group program manager, and then this role I have right now is a group program manager role as well.
Wow. So what was your degree in school?
My degree was in organizational behavior.
Hmm. Interesting.
Oh.
But when microcomputers came out in 1982, which was the year I graduated from college, and I fell in love, I would take care of my kids in the day and stay up all night teaching myself how to use the computer and program it. And so I was kind of self-taught at the beginning. And when I first went into the workforce, I went looking for a computer job because I was so passionate about it and started developing, did development work. And back then, you know, we didn't have this concept of a program manager. So the job that I got hired into that I liked the best actually was a program manager job, but they didn't call it that then. It was, I don't even remember what they called me, but it was with the MicroTelPlan program at Michigan State University. And basically you were responsible for the end-to-end delivery of the product. There were developers and writers, and I did some of the writing, and I did some of the specking, and kind of a little of everything.
You were a program manager.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it was your plan to stay home and have kids, a large family, 6 kids, and then get back into the workforce.
Right.
So you did that on purpose. So that's a kind of unusual path.
Yes.
It's often the other way around. So how were you like in your 30s when you kind of entered the workforce for real for the first time?
Well, I had been in for a couple of years working just part-time after I graduated. I did that until my third child was born. And that was when I realized that it was really time to focus at home. Mm. So I came back, I was 36 when I came back into the workforce, full-time. Mm. And I'm really happy with my decision because I got to kind of have the best of both worlds. You did say, you know, decide to have 6 kids. I kind of decided them one at a time. When it got to 6, I thought, I'm done.
It took 6 times, huh?
It did. People kept asking, how many more? I don't know. I'll know when I'm ready.
So 36, so tell us about that experience. Did you feel any kind of like reverse? I mean, did you feel weird starting at 36, kind of ground up, or how did that work for you? And that was at Microsoft?
It was at Microsoft, yes. you know, I don't really remember feeling weird. I knew that I was, you know, coming in with people that were many years younger than me, but I didn't worry about it. I just came in and got to know people and had fun and contributed and did my thing, and it worked out okay.
Certainly.
I didn't see a reason to worry about it. And I think one of the rewarding things for me, too, especially now, is I have two sons who are computer engineers. So it's kind of unusual, I think, for a mom to have children follow in their footsteps, but that's been really fun for me. We have a lot of fun conversations.
That's great. Do they work here?
Well, they both have at one time. My oldest son is working on his PhD in computer engineering at UW, and he really wants to get into rocket hardware. So he will be interning this summer at a company in Utah. And then my other son has interned here 4 times. And Google made him a better offer this summer, which I hated. I really tried to convince him to switch, but he likes their food. So when you're 21, I guess food is a compelling.
Did you hear that, Lisa Brummel, and all your recruiters?
Better food in the cafeteria.
That's a very important point.
Wow.
It's simple things like that that can just change someone's mind.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're a GPM now?
I am.
So that means you manage a team?
I do.
So tell us about that.
Well, my team is, I've got 2 FTEs and a whole lot of vendors. In the compliance space where I work, we deal with a lot of curveballs that come our way. So there's a lot of requirements and things that just kind of come at us, a new government thing that they want us to take care of, and so we have a large vendor staff. And I've managed larger teams. I enjoy this. It's a difficult spot because you have to scramble a lot, and that can be really stressful. But it's also cool because you've got lots of problems to solve all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And you're working with the developer or the product group versus marketing.
That's correct.
So you're working directly with the engineers and the developers. And how do you
the smart people, yeah.
Exactly. Marketing people are smart too. In a different kind of way.
Yep.
So in your role doesn't sound extremely technical right now.
So, well, it actually is.
Okay, tell us about that.
Because one of the things we deliver is protocol specifications. You can see those out on the web under programs called MCPP and WSPP, WSPP. But it's a way that we make the protocols that our products use, all the technical information about them, available to folks who want to write interoperable solutions.
Mm.
And the documents are extremely technical. We work with the very senior architects, and we work with very senior developers, as well as other folks across the division, because anyone who has a protocol that ships in Windows is a candidate for creating a very technical document that could be used for interoperability.
Hmm.
Interesting.
So,
remember the Help Center HCP protocol? That was kind of a bummer.
Well,
I was one that I worked with on back in the day. I wonder if it's even still around. Anyway,
I could probably tell you if I looked in the right tool.
So, is this I'm curious how the architects view this. Is this something that they feel like is a good thing or like a necessary evil?
I think for the most part they're extremely supportive and they work really hard because they recognize the value and the importance to Microsoft of creating accurate specifications. They take that very seriously and they work very hard at it.
That's cool. Great. So over 10 years at Microsoft, that's a long time. So how has kind of the, as a female in technology, how has that evolved for you personally over the last decade?
When you ask that question, what comes to mind to me is more about the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I've seen is I've seen a lot more, I would say even in more recent years, I felt so supported. I guess I'll say it this way. In this particular role that I have felt so supported as a female. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't really matter. You know, people were really helping me to be successful at this job, and the team has been great. And I think I've had other roles at Microsoft where maybe I didn't feel that as much. But I know that Bob Muglia and Bill Lang and Ian McDonald and other folks in the server org, it's just a really important thing for them to have the diversity in the employee base because that makes our products better. And that support has just been huge. So I think right now, you know, in a way I feel just a lot of gratitude because that kind of supports what helps you be successful and allows me to do the fun things that I love to do every day.
Absolutely. You've got to have a healthy balance. You've got to balance out the knuckle draggers. Right?
Well, and you know, it's not just the support. It's also the challenge. You've got to be given the opportunities.
Right.
Yes.
And the resources that you need to. And all of those together really, I think, whether you're male or female, all of those really combine to helping you be successful.
Outstanding.
So have you, over the years, seen the diversity at Microsoft start to really swell and better represent our customer base? Was it more homogenized when you first joined?
I think so. I think there's been a lot stronger effort to reach out and to bring women in, especially into to more senior levels, to help grow women because of that recognition. And not just women, but other diversity candidates. Mm-hmm. We bring a perspective that's important to the products. You know, when you ask that specific question, it's a little tough for me to answer in terms of protocols, because protocols are very, you know, ACT response. It's a very technical type of thing, and it's a description of how code or bits flow over the wire. Mm-hmm. So have we been more creative there? I don't know.
So let me ask this question. Why did you get into this madness? I mean, you mentioned you studied computer science.
Yeah.
Why? Did any of have any of your daughters planning on studying computer science?
Do you know, I have a daughter that's in law school at Yale, so we're really proud of that.
Nice.
And then I have another daughter who's decided to go into aeronautical engineering.
Excellent.
And she tells me that her easiest classes are her computer science classes. So there's something in the DNA or the way they've learned to think.
Interesting.
And my youngest daughter's too young to tell, so, yeah.
But did you find that you were good in math, or?
Yeah, math has always been a really strong passion of mine, and I've really enjoyed it. Mm. And I think, you know, speaking to the kids, my kids have got computers before they got furniture almost, mm-hmm. you know. Mm. We kind of had a joke in our family that, you know, a computer was more important than a couch mm-hmm. in the early years. So they all kind of grew up with, you know, computers everywhere.
Interesting.
Were you introduced to computers as a young girl?
No, I really wasn't. I think the first time I really heard about it was I used to take ballet, and I danced with Ballet West as a teenager. And I had a friend who I would carpool with, and her dad was a mainframe computer designer. And when he would often take us out for pie on our way home, and he'd talk about his job, and I always thought it sounded so cool, just really cool. Hmm. And I think that was kind of where the passion got started. Mm-hmm. But it was really when the microcomputer came out. Because if you think about it, you know, I wanted to have the kids, and I wanted something I could do at home. And a microcomputer, you know, it's cool. You can do that in your house, and you can learn about it and do all kinds of fun things. And when I got involved in the Microtel Plan program in the late 80s, they were already on the net because they were in the university system in the early versions of the net. And so we were communicating across the world, and I just thought it was all really cool.
Hmm. Absolutely.
Hmm. So one thing that Charles and I often talk about is how there are some theories that say that men and women think differently. Are you, when you're in meetings, do you find that you are putting forward a perspective that's different from your male colleagues?
I have a lot of male colleagues tell me that's the case. I don't know that I recognize it as much, but I hear that a lot, that there's a different perspective that I bring in, and that I think anytime you have a difficult customer, some of my other roles have been around customer spaces, or you even have a customer that's great, there's a communication aspect that I think a woman can bring a strength to, and I feel like that's a place where I've really been able to contribute in any customer-facing role that I've had.
That's interesting.
What happens when your job's at Microsoft? I know you used to be involved with the TAP programs, which
right,
which are early adopter programs. What else have you done?
I did TAP, actually, for quite a while. I started out doing the internal rollout with MSIT. I was the Windows side of it. We designed the Windows Server 2003 rollout. And that was a lot of fun, because I think the only thing cooler than designing technology is watching it get moved into use. Mm. And the first user gets to figure out all the problems, right? And if you've probably gathered by now, I think problem solving is cool.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. And then I was a lead over a team that did Windows TAP client server. And then when I was GPM, it was the ISV OEM and customer TAP programs. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was a writer. I was responsible for the first Windows deployment planning guide. Mm. And that was a lot of fun. We introduced a new way of doing documentation in that guide that was more around how a user thinks than describing a system, and teaching them how to design their own systems. And that was fun. And before that, I was with Systems Management Server. I did some documentation for them. I did their resource kit, ran a team for that, and then I started as a tester in the scalability lab. That's where I learned about system debugging and a lot of cool things.
So tell us more about the TAP programs and working with early adopters. What were some of the pain points of that?
Well, you know, it takes a special customer to be a good early adopter, because you are learning together, and you need customers who really are very interested in being on the cutting edge of strategy for their IT departments. And that was, I think, the fun part. So, for example, I remember when we rolled out Windows Forest Mode. That was with Windows Server 2003. They had the concept of a domain in Windows 2000, and they added a forest in 2003, which you know, we had to make a changeover. Actually, this was internally in Microsoft. And the night before we were going to make the switch, it was going to take the whole corporate network up to this forest level, and we knew it had the potential to impact everything because the directory service impacts user logon, replication all around the world, DNS, DHCP, so people's ability to connect to the system. Mm. And I got a phone call about 10 p.m., and somebody said, do you realize that Bill Gates is going to be doing his keynote tomorrow morning? You guys better stop. Don't roll it out. And I thought, no. We've prepared too long for this. We need to roll it out. So I spent quite a bit of time on the phone with folks, and we decided, we got the IT department, who was down in Florida at the time, to set up a system so that if something went wrong, nothing would happen for the folks that were down at NGB, and that Bill Gates' keynote would go fine and all the speakers. Mm-hmm. And we went ahead and revved up. And, you know, a lot of preparation. We went into really detailed plans for what we do in case of a disaster, right? What happens if any step along the way doesn't work? And each step was double-checked, and we had performance monitors that we were monitoring and different counters that we were watching at each step to make sure that the system went. And like I said, a rollback plan. And so we did each step just methodically. And we got to the end. It was like almost a non-event. And it was exciting, but it was kind of disappointing too, right? Mm-hmm. But most of all, we were just extremely happy that the product was designed so well that we could take a company like Microsoft up to forest mode and it went smoothly. And then watching each company come behind that had a slightly different design and the way that they were going to do it and how their replication would work, and just watching them each come online, just a lot of fun.
So, I'm not an IT type of dude, but what does forest mode mean?
Well, forest mode allows you to have forests. So, within Windows, you've got these, some call them a security boundary, but they're mainly a forest is a security boundary, and then a domain is what you use to manage your users. And you set up this domain structure. You can use different methods for doing that. Like some people do it by location. So they might have a domain in North America and one in South America and one in Europe. And then the forest is the boundary that collects a group of domains together as replication partners.
Okay.
And I guess actually the forest was first introduced in 2000, but the forests couldn't talk to each other, and that's what we were introducing for Server 2003.
Nice.
So a company could have multiple forests, and that's what forest mode was about, was it allowed replication to occur between forests.
And then, of course, in Windows Server 2008, you have the concept of planets, right? Or continents.
I think that's a new one. Yeah. You know, are you inventing new software for us?
Yeah. Just, I'm kidding. It really wasn't a very good analogy either. Because what would come after a forest? It wouldn't be a planet. Anyway, Ritzy?
Ask another question.
Yeah, back to you.
Any role models that you have? Is there anyone, men, women, whatever, or at the company or just in the industry that you look up to, or either now or before, or that were important to you?
You know, I'd say I've had a lot of wonderful mentors along the way. I know I've always looked up to Ian McDonald. I think he's a great champion of a lot of folks and helping people grow.
Cool.
I've always looked up to him. Dave Thompson has been one I've always looked up to. I really enjoyed working with him in the Windows Server 2003 wave and the way he thinks about things and problems. Really cool. In the IT world, I've always had a lot of respect for Bob Davis. I think he's a person who really personifies a caring organization, and his people feel that, and I think that's really cool. So, you know, while I haven't really had just one particular role model, what I've tried to do is look for people that I respect and maybe adopt some of those qualities that I value.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked for any women role models and come up empty?
Well, that's a bit of a challenge, isn't it?
Yes.
I saw this obituary in the Wall Street Journal last week or the last few weeks about a woman who's a CEO in an IT company. It was a smaller company. I don't remember the name of it, but in part of the obituary, they said, you know, people would often ask her, who are your role models? And she'd say, well, it's kind of hard to find them. So, and it's not, you know, there are some women like Carly Fiorina who have done well, and we've got some women VPs here, Julia Larson-Green, certainly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But some of those folks seem a little further away, and when I'm looking for a role model, I want somebody that I can have a little more one-on-one with, and that's a little tougher to find, I think.
Do you think role models are really that important to attract people into a certain area?
I do. I think there's people that are trailblazers, doesn't really matter because they're going to go off and do their thing. But I think a lot of people look around and say, gee, how can I be successful at this? And finding someone that's done that shows them it can be done, and that gives them the courage to try it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And I think that when you're in the minority, it helps to find somebody who's like you, just to understand that, you know, you can make it too, versus seeing people who look like you all the time.
There's not that many of those. So, you know, what's interesting, I would argue, though, I wouldn't argue with that. I mean, clearly it's a good point. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the pool of females who are actually going to be looking out for role models is not very big, right? So, in other words, there's some fundamental issue going on in the world where not many women are that interested in, I mean, your daughter, for example, clearly very intelligent, mathematical-oriented person, chose something else because she's more interested in you know, space and rockets. But so my question is, how do we get people interested in technology, right? By making software that's really simple to use? Is that how we get, is that how we get more people interested in writing code? By the tools that we make? So I guess that's really the issue. I mean, that's just a random question to ask you. What's your perspective on how do we get people interested in computer science?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think one is cool products and cool tools, but I think there are people who just like to use them, right? They just want stuff to work. They want to turn on their computer and have everything just work so they have this great tool. I think that one thing that's really key in that area for computer science is seeing successful women. I think a lot of younger women don't see that, and they worry. And there's a lot of, there's been a lot in the press, even in the last few years, about women in IT and women in IT dropping off. And there's another aspect to it as well that I think is lifestyle related. So there's this perception that if you go into IT, you've got to carry a beeper and you've got to be available 24/7. If I'm a young lady that wants to have a family and I'm thinking, okay, I'd like to have a career and I'd like to have a family, the idea of being on a pager 24/7 isn't really appealing to me. Right. So I think we have to help the young women understand that there are a lot of careers in technology that actually do allow for you to have children and to have your career both. And I know Microsoft has actually made some strides in that with a FlexWork program that we have and job sharing.
That's right.
There's a couple of general managers in IT that are two women that are job sharing because they have young children. And I think that's really cool. That, those are the types of things I think we need to not only do, but we need to get out there. I'm the Microsoft representative for Hoppers, a women's conference this October. And one of the things we're looking at in terms of panels is just that very thing. How can we get a group of cross women from different companies, not just Microsoft, but Hewlett-Packard and Symantec and other technology companies, who can talk about the diverse ways that you can work so that you can have this IT experience as well. And I think the other thing is that there's just a lot of girls who just don't seem to connect with math. And I don't have the answer for that, but I know among my own children, there's this perception, I think, especially in high school for a lot of girls, that if they're not good at math, it's embarrassing. And so I know what we've done with our high school daughter is we teach her math at home. She does the rest of her class at school because she's embarrassed to ask the questions. My other two daughters didn't have a problem. They just sailed through. But for my younger daughter, that just is a little bit of a problem. So by bringing her home and doing her math at home, she's able to ask whatever questions and not feel that embarrassment that comes with some kids.
Interesting.
Can you, for our viewers at home who may not know what Hoppers is, can you talk a little bit about that?
Hoppers is a group of women engineers, and it was founded, I don't really know all the details, but the woman that it was founded after was Grace Hoppers, who was an early pioneer in IT and computer engineering. And basically it's a group that works together to support women in technology, to help women's careers. There's a lot of focus on the younger women that are in college and helping them get their career started. And they have a yearly conference where women come and speak to women about technology, and I think we have actually a pretty good plan here this year. We've got Andrea Wisternan, who's an architect in Windows. We're so proud to have a woman architect in Windows.
Yay.
Wait a minute.
We're going to interview her.
Say her name one more time slowly. Are you kidding me?
No.
A woman architect?
Andrea Wisternan.
All right.
Hopefully, Andrea, I said that right.
We'll be scheduling plus her today for an interview. We've been coming up empty on finding really deeply technical women at the company to interview. It's been tough.
Yeah.
Especially with the architect title, because that usually means they're above all the SDEs, and
that's
they get
right
to think about how you connect the dots,
yeah,
which is very interesting.
Yep.
Then they just send down work to the SDE boys. But there are SDE women here as well that we will definitely go and
developers and engineers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the point is that Microsoft has things in place to support the women that are here at the company.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Aliases and clubs and organizations and a support network in general.
Cool.
And we're hearing about that more and more, so I feel like Microsoft is really doing more than just lip service to that.
Oh, I totally agree. And that's huge. I know there's a group of us here in Windows... Windows Server, who got to be friends a number of years ago, actually, as a result of Bill Vecti bringing us together for lunch and asking us some questions about what it was like to be a woman in Windows. And, you know, that support network is awesome. And I know sometimes when we're all thinking about our next job, it's, I don't know if I want to leave Windows because I've got this great support network of these women. We've all grown together and really help each other. And I think the other thing that women really need to do for each other is champion each other.
Yeah,
that is just so important. You know, I find when I hear that one of these women has gotten a promotion, I'm as happy for them as I am when I get my own. Mm-hmm. That's exciting, and I think that support is so key.
Yep.
Which is interesting because I think that might, in a very real sense, be a fundamental difference between the species, the sexual,
the genders.
Thank you, of the species, because I don't think that's actually the case amongst the knuckle draggers, right? We tend to be much more competitive. Now, you could argue that that's not true. I know Ritzy's very competitive. So the point that I'm trying to make is that there's not that sense of camaraderie and, hope you win amongst the males.
I actually would disagree with that.
Okay, good.
I agree with the competition, and I think that there is a lot of competition among males and maybe more so than among most groups of females. But I think that men cut each other slack a lot.
Hmm.
Right. When someone's on your team, you're going to compete with them when you've got like a one-on-one thing going on. Mm-hmm. But when some other team is coming to compete against you, mm-hmm. those men just meld together and support each other really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think women need to do better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah, I like that. That's food for thought.
Absolutely.
But the point is, and this is why we're doing this series, and this is why we're here interviewing today, is that it's getting better all the time.
Yes.
And there's a home, a good home here for women.
Absolutely.
There is, and we want more women to come.
Yes.
Yes.
Join the company. We have decent food.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it's getting better.
Well, there's Wendy's down the street.
The problem is it's not free.
That's worse.
Or something healthy.
That's true. Come on, Lisa. Give us free food.
It's all Lisa's fault.
It's the juice bars we'd like to have back. The juice bars.
We used to have
those.
Juice bars?
Yes.
Like, where are they?
They're gone.
I had to buy a juicer at home and make my own, which isn't so bad. I make fresh juice every morning because I loved it so much, but I would love to have that back.
All right. Well, this is fodder for HR to get together. And HR, of course, is predominantly... composed of females.
That's right.
Species.
So they might want
to. So let's see
too.
Some of this compassion.
And on that note, that's our snack size interview with Linda Apsley. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And we'll come and see you again.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye.